Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. Drink beer, talk NFL and college football. I'm your host, Brad Fowler, and McKenzie Brewing is the official beer of Pint Glass Football. Follow them at McKenzie Brewing. Follow us at pintglassfootball.com. If you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. What's up, PGF Nation? We're back with another great show. Apparently, there's five NFL offenses so good, it doesn't matter who's under center. Two former players claim they belong in the Hall of Fame. We'll tell you if we think they do. We've each got three offensive breakout players in the NFL this season and a lot more to get to. But joining me to break it all down, my co-host, Alex Higdon. Alex, what is going on?
72 days, Brad. 72 days until September 7th. We are only 72 days until NFL kickoff, and I cannot wait.
Yeah, and you know what, Alex? That means we're even closer to week zero college football, which, as you guys know, starts a couple weeks even before the NFL. So we're getting really close. Maybe not really close, but we're getting there, all right? We're getting there. We're in the middle of summer. I get that. A lot of fun stuff to talk about, though. Time to just do some fun segments. The news has slowed down a little bit, as it always does this time of year, so time to get into some more fun segments, start breaking down things, start ranking players and positions and doing all kinds of cool stuff this summer. Alex, I can't wait to jump into it. There is a little bit of news that I want to jump into before we get into that stuff. The New York Jets have been chosen to be on HBO's Hard Knocks for this preseason. Now, the criteria for a team to be selected, and this has been established for several years now, it includes teams without a new head coach, those who have not made the playoffs in the past 2 years, and those that have not been featured on the show in the last decade. So with that criteria, it came down to four teams: the Bears, the Saints, Commanders, and the Jets. Apparently, the Jets aren't happy about it. They've been pretty vocal about not wanting to be on the show. I understand why. I mean, it seems like it would be a major distraction if I was trying to run a football team. But as a football fan and as a fan of the show, get your popcorn ready. I mean, this season should have some of the best TV ratings they've had in years, if not ever. I know I can't wait to watch it. Alex, what do you think?
I can't wait to watch it as well, but I will say to your initial point, if I am Robert Saleh, this is the last thing that I wanted for my team as I try and get them ready when I know that I'm going to be on the hot seat with the new coordinator, with Aaron Rodgers. We have a lot of different unique personalities in this locker room, and I do not want this, specifically when we have not signed Quinnen Williams. So now this is all going to play out on television unless they sign him beforehand. But this is not, if I am a football coach, if I'm Robert Saleh, this is not something I want. However, as an organization, as a top-down look on it, yeah, this is great. I mean, we knew what Rex Ryan was in, I believe it was 2010, that team with Mark Sanchez at the helm and, you know, crazy Rex Ryan talking crazy and everything that was going on, how the ratings hit. Now, if I'm not mistaken, they also won an Emmy for that, for the year that the Jets were on as well. So they got an Emmy for that. And here they go again. But this is something, as a football coach, I would not want. But definitely get your popcorn ready.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's going to be a major distraction. If I'm a Jets fan, I'm not happy about it at all, because this is the first time in a long time that the Jets have real expectations this year. But now you've got this major distractions, cameras in your face. You're going to have to deal with this while you're trying to mold this young team with this veteran quarterback. I wouldn't be a fan. Like I said, if I was a Jets fan, I wouldn't be too thrilled about this. If I'm a Jets player or somebody in that organization, I wouldn't be thrilled. But as a football fan, man, I can't wait. Former Georgia and NFL quarterback Aaron Murray made headlines when he said on the Three and Out podcast recently, when asked about Caleb Williams, he said, quote, "He's Mahomes today. There isn't the work that Andy Reid needs to put into it. You get Caleb now, he's ready to go. I know everyone hates comparisons, but he's Mahomes, but he's more ready to play in the NFL rather than Mahomes was. I think he's a better prospect." Now, before I give my thoughts, I'm curious, what do you think, Alex?
I think this is the quote-unquote Stephen Curry effect. Curry started launching threes from all over the place, and then we got some guy named Trae Young who was launching threes in college and doing a lot of similar things to Steph Curry. But when he got to the league, he wasn't Steph Curry, even though there were still a lot of similarities, and he can hit the three from a bunch of different range in terms of range. This is the same thing that I see. I mean, what we see from Mahomes and what we're really talking about more is the arm throwing angles, the bad footwork throwing, and still being able to be accurate, the no-look passes, and everything that you see when you look at a highlight reel of Caleb Williams. However, excuse me, the translation from college to where he may go in the NFL, he's more than likely going to be going to a team that is not ready, that does not have the coaching staff or infrastructure, perhaps, that the Chiefs had at the moment. So I want to say, let's slow our roll. We do see what we see in college. We can see the similarities. Again, it's really more about the arm angles and incredible throws that he's making from all different angles and falling down and things like that, still being on point. So I do see it. I do understand it. But he's still not Patrick Mahomes. We have to be able to give a lot of these guys and stop driving with the media train that we do with this social media era and giving these kids their flowers and saying that who they are before they can even step on the field. I still say, slow your roll. Let's take a few beats. I know there's always a race to be first and then say, I told you so. But in terms of what we're looking at, let's take a moment. Let's take a breath. Let's let everything play out and let the man show us what he is when he gets to the NFL.
I think I get what Aaron Murray was trying to say as far as evaluating him as a prospect and saying that his game reminds you of Mahomes in a lot of ways. And I can see that, like you touched on, being able to manipulate the arm angles, throwing off platform, the athleticism, rolling out of the pocket, using his legs. He has some things that you can look at and say, okay, I can see some of the similarities. I think the key word here is prospect, because that's what we need to look at. He's basically saying that coming out of college, Caleb Williams is a better prospect. And people freak out because they forget Mahomes was not this slam dunk number one overall pick. Everyone was knowing he was going to go number one a year in advance. He wasn't that kind of prospect. He was seen as a guy with a lot of talent, but was a project player that needed to develop. Look, Ryan Leaf and David Carr were better prospects than Mahomes. Lots of great prospects don't pan out. It's an inexact science. We know that. Everyone knows Tom Brady was a six-round pick. I've said this before, but I don't think Mahomes is winning multiple Super Bowls and MVPs if he was drafted by Detroit or Jacksonville. Now, would he be great? Would he still have been a great player? Yeah, he probably would have been. He likely would have been a very good player, but I doubt his resume is anywhere close to what it looks like right now in KC. Now, Caleb is going to go to the worst team in the NFL. He's not going to have a Hall of Fame coach like Andy Reid, maybe the best pass-catching tight end of all time, or a Tyreek Hill to throw to. He's going to be on a roster that has holes. So will Caleb Williams, is he going to have a Mahomes-level career? Probably not. But coming out of college, and that's what we're talking about here, he's the better prospect than Mahomes was. So I get what Aaron Murray was saying, even though people get really riled up when they hear those type of comparisons. Alex, two former NFL players claim they belong in the Hall of Fame. First is former NFL running back Fred Taylor. He said, quote, "My numbers were better than the majority of the backs that had ever played the game." Now, Alex, he had 11,695 career rushing yards, a 4.6 yards per carry average, and 66 touchdowns. But I'll ask you, should he be in the Hall of Fame?
So this is personal for me, having spoken to Fred a few times and him, us being able to do a few things with his podcast and him inviting my artist on. I have an affinity for Fred Taylor. I am a Florida Gator fan, so I am going to be 1,000% biased here. Yes, he is a Hall of Famer. I mean, if you look at everybody that is in the Hall of Fame before him and after him, they're all in the Hall of Fame. Every single player that is eligible is in the Hall of Fame, with the exception of Frank Gore and Adrian Peterson. And that's simply because they are not eligible. At the time when Fred Taylor retired, I want to say he was top 12, if I'm not mistaken, maybe top 13 at the most. So he does deserve his flowers. He does deserve to be placed where he feels that he should be placed. I understand specifically when you get to wide receiver and running back, there is a logjam there. And it's an ongoing conversation I have in many spaces that we share, Brad, and in many spaces in the quote-unquote barbershops across America who are Hall of Fame players when you start specifically dwindling down into the numbers. Because if we mention a name that's right behind him simply by 200 yards, a lot of people would not say that Steven Jackson, who's at 11,438 directly behind Fred Taylor, is a Hall of Famer. So I think there's a lot of nuance and there is some context around when you say somebody's got a Hall of Fame. And on top of that, Steven Jackson has more touchdowns at 69 than does Fred Taylor. So we have to be very careful what the Hall of Fame is looking at. I love the NFL Hall of Fame because they simply don't just put anybody in. That's not a shot at any of the Hall of Fame, but wink, wink. So I like that. It's tough. You have to earn it. I like the fact that Deion says we need a wing for us and those other people you're putting in. So this is an honor that I do feel that one day Fred Taylor within the next 5 years will have bestowed upon him. So I do believe that he is a Hall of Famer. However, I do want to say that I do understand the context that's around why it may be taking a little bit longer and not a slam dunk the way that a lot of people think it is, and perhaps the way that he thinks it is as well. But I'm all for Fred Taylor in the Hall of Fame. He 1,000% deserves to be there.
Yeah, Alex, he's a guy who was a really, really good player. And I think you brought up some really great points there. When you look at the numbers, you would look at it and say, okay, he's probably deserving, but there's tiers to Hall of Fame status. As we know, Hall of Fame is the best of the best, but there's a big difference between guys who are first ballot, slam dunk, no brainers, and then the guys that take several ballots to get in. He's one of those guys that is on that list of several ballots. The logjam that you spoke of at the position certainly doesn't help. I think he's right on the fence. I don't know if I can sit here and say he's for sure a Hall of Famer. Like I said, man, he was a really good player, a player I really enjoyed watching his career, an underrated player, quite frankly. And that doesn't help his case because I think he really had an underrated career, especially in his prime. I think the pushback was he was never a guy that was considered the best running back in the NFL. Like even at his peak, he was never really in that conversation. He never finished any season in the top five in the league as far as rushing yards, yards from scrimmage, or touchdowns. He was never a first-team All-Pro, and he was only a Pro Bowler one time in his career. To me, I just don't know if there's enough meat on the bone there, enough resume that you could look at and say, that's the resume of a Hall of Famer. I hope he gets in, but I understand if he didn't. But yeah, really good player. I understand him making a case for it, though, because like you mentioned there, his numbers are still really good. He certainly has a case to be made, that's for sure. Now, the other former player who says he belongs in the Hall of Fame is former Broncos wide receiver Rod Smith. He told the Denver Gazette, quote, "I feel I'm deserving, but I don't get to vote. And you've got to look at my complete body of work." So once again, Alex, I'll ask you, should Rod Smith be in the Hall of Fame?
Rod Smith. And I think he was on those back-to-back Super Bowl teams. So I know there's always going to be a push when you have these type of players that are on these type of teams. He's at 11,389 yards, basically mashed in between Mushon Muhammad and Keenan McCardle. Good receivers, borderline great receivers, and they had some years where they were the top tier, probably maybe top five receivers. But when we get to Rod Smith, 11,389 and 68 touchdowns, he's just going to have a harder time than Fred Taylor, who's sitting at number, I believe we looked at him, he was number 17 on that list, and Rod Smith is sitting at number 34. And there's a few players that are going to be in front of him where, I mean, I've argued a long time because a lot of people don't even realize that person like Brandon Marshall, his numbers, you have him that's not in the Hall of Fame. You have Torrey Holt. You have Anquan Boldin. You have Andre Johnson. You have Reggie Wayne. You have a lot. You have Steve Smith Sr. There are the logjam here, which I was referring to earlier. The logjam is a lot longer at wide receiver than it is for running back. And Rod Smith is simply going to be caught in the minutiae of what is all these wide receivers in front of him. I didn't even mention Henry Ellard. I also didn't mention Julio Jones, who has not officially retired yet, but who's sitting at number 16. And I mean, there's Jimmy Smith, Hines Ward, Derek Mason. And, you know, there's just a myriad of a bunch of receivers that are in front of him, whether they get in or not. But those are all people that are sitting in front of him that are going to have heavy, heavy consideration. And when his name comes up, those names will also be mentioned, because once you mention one, you have to mention the others that in which he's close to. So the argument is going to be a lot harder. You're going to need the people like a Shannon Sharp, like a John Elway, that are going to have to bang the table for him in order for him to get over the hump. And I believe that he might have a strong chance. But like I said, there are some serious contenders that are ahead of him that he's going to have a hard time leapfrogging to get into the hall. So this is one that I can see going maybe up to 10 years where he may have to wait up to 10 years before he gets in simply because of the logjam of receivers in front of him.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think it's even harder, like you said, for wide receivers to get in the hall. You mentioned the numbers, 849 catches, over 11,000 yards, 68 touchdowns. He holds the Broncos franchise records in receptions, receiving yards, and touchdowns. And you mentioned where he was historically, but if we look at where receiving numbers and passing numbers have gone, especially in the last 10 to 15 years, we've seen these numbers explode because of the rule changes and the way the game is officiated now. So I think receiving numbers, it gets a little messier when you're looking at guys who kind of played in that era before the game really opened up in that regard. If you look at what he did in his playing career from 95 to 06, he was fourth in the NFL in receptions, fifth in receiving yards, and seventh in touchdowns. He also led the league in receptions in 2001, and he was, like you mentioned, a key member of two Super Bowl championship teams, which I know is going to help make that push to get him into the Hall of Fame. He managed to put up those numbers as well, Alex, in a run-first offense, a team that had a 1,000-yard rusher almost every year he was there. So when you think about the era he played in, the offense he played in, and considering how good his numbers were, I think he makes a pretty strong case to get in. But I'm with you. There's so many receivers that are still waiting to get in. It might be a while, similar to a guy like Fred Taylor. Both these guys, unfortunately, might be waiting a while to get into the Hall of Fame. But I think you can make a strong case for both guys. Hey, PGF Nation, are you tired of the same old bland food at your tailgate parties? Well, let me tell you about my friends at The Tailgate Foodie, the seasoning and barbecue sauce company that specializes in elevating your tailgate and backyard cooking game. With their unique blend of spices and sauces, The Tailgate Foodie will take your taste buds on a flavor journey that you won't forget. Use code PINTGLASSFOODIE for 15% off your first order at thetailgatefoodie.com. Zencastr is the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Zencastr's post-production process takes the headache out of audio production. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. Coordinating all your guests to record in person is painful and tedious. Easily invite up to 11 participants per recording with one click. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code PGFP, and you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Hey there, PGF Nation. You know what's important when you're having a good time? Staying hydrated. And that's where Liquid IV comes in, the category-winning hydration brand that's fueling your well-being. With just one stick of Liquid IV, you get 2 times faster hydration than water alone, plus 5 essential vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And let's not forget about the convenience factor. The packaging is perfect for on the go, whether you're tailgating or just hanging out on the couch. But what really sets Liquid IV apart is the amazing flavors. Personally, I'm all about the Concord Grape and Lemon Lime. And with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, Liquid IV is made with premium ingredients to give you the hydration and nourishment you need. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code PGFP at liquidiv.com. So next time you're cracking open a cold one and settling in for the big game, make sure you've got Liquid IV by your side. Trust me, your body will thank you. So, Alex, I came across a really interesting article from Yahoo Sports NFL writer Charles McDonald, who recently had an article called Quarterback Who? Here are five offenses who would succeed no matter who's under center. I thought this was a really interesting read here, and I wanted to get your response to this article. The teams that are mentioned, I'll run them down first, and then you can tell me if you agree, disagree, and kind of what your thoughts are overall on this. He's got the Philadelphia Eagles, the San Francisco 49ers, the Detroit Lions, the Seattle Seahawks, and the Cincinnati Bengals as his five teams that could succeed no matter who was playing quarterback. Alex, what are some of your initial takeaways here?
My initial takeaway is we're in the dog days of summer and people are looking for stories to tell. I'm sorry. I will not diminish these quarterbacks, especially Jalen Hurts and what he meant to that Eagles offense. I don't think you can just, because when you say something like that, it doesn't matter. Now, if we just skip the Eagles for a moment, we go to the 49ers. You know what? You have a strong case there because you watched a Mr. Irrelevant lead that team and perhaps could have won had he not gotten hurt. So you can have an argument there. That's something that I won't, that's a fun conversation because we actually kind of saw that play out a little bit. But the Eagles, with what Jalen Hurts did and what he was able to do the year before, specifically the year before, which gave them the opportunity to go ahead and then shape that offense in that way, because had he not done that the previous year before, I don't know if the Eagles go all in on that style of offense, on that type of play calling, unless Jalen Hurts was there. So that's hard to say. Now, the Niners, like I said before, they're consistently have always been running their offense the way they run their offense. We've seen Kyle Shanahan in several different places. He was the offensive coordinator when they draft Kirk Cousins. So we kind of know that he is in the molding based on what he did with his father and then what he's done as an OC and as a head coach, that he has the molding that there's a lot of people that perhaps you can maybe put in that position. He could still be able to win. So I'll give you the argument there. The Lions know. I know what the feeling is around Jared Goff. I understand who Ben Johnson is. He's a young, hot offensive coordinator, but it's only been 1 year in that offense for Ben Johnson where you see what you got from Jared Goff. And we all know it takes 1 year of defenses to catch up. I think that one needs a little bit more time. The Seahawks, I watch a lot of tape. This was simply Geno Smith playing in the same style of offense that Russell Wilson had, except he played within the confines of that offense. So I will give a little bit of lenience there, and maybe we can have the conversation about it. But let's also remember that Geno has been in that system for about maybe 3, if not 4 years. But if you want to have the discussion, I'm all for it. The Bengals, absolutely not. Joe Burrow came into the franchise where they reuse jock straps. And I'll repeat that again. If you don't know, just Google TJ Who's Your Mama. And when he talks about they had to reuse jock straps, that franchise is not the franchise that you can say you could bring in any quarterback, because this was a guy that had to overcome a lot of what we know of respectfully Mike Brown and how that organization has been run. And he flipped the organization along with the draft picks that they did. So we cannot diminish that, but I'm willing to have the conversation about the Niners and the Seahawks, simply because we've seen what they've done when they had to immediately go to the backup quarterback or the backup quarterback in Brock Purdy's case. I just will not diminish these other quarterbacks.
Alex, I agree with you. And look, people who've been listening to this podcast know I was not high on Jalen Hurts coming out of the draft. I wasn't a believer that he would break out this last season, and he absolutely proved me wrong. The guy had a big time breakout year. He took a huge step forward, was right in the mix of an MVP level season. I get what he's saying in the article as far as the roster. The Eagles roster is loaded, and there's no doubt about it. He's got playmakers. He's got a great offensive line. He's got a great running game. He's got a great defense that gets him the ball back. I get all that. You could easily make a case that the Eagles have the best roster in the NFL, but to think that any quarterback could come in and run that system, especially the system they run in Philly, and utilizes his athleticism, utilizes the things that he does really well, That's just nonsense. I can't even believe that he would put that guy on this list, because I'm with you. I think it's a huge disrespect to Jalen Hurts and what he's been for that team. The San Francisco Niners, I think you can make a case for, and you said it perfectly. This is a team that's gone through a bunch of different quarterbacks. They've had a revolving door of quarterbacks, and almost all of them have played at a pretty high level. I think Shanahan, the play calling, and the weapons, it just seems to work no matter who he puts in there. So that is one team I can agree with him on. Detroit is interesting because they have arguably the best offensive line in football, but it's not like they exactly have a ton of playmakers. To make it seem like anybody could do what Jared Goff is doing, I think is a little bit disrespectful as well. I know Jared Goff's not a superstar quarterback. I get that. But he's played at a pretty good level since he's came to Detroit. I don't think you could just throw in anyone and they'd still be playing at that level in that offense. The Seahawks, I kind of get what he's saying with the Seahawks. I like what I saw from Geno Smith, but he also did kind of fade a little bit down the stretch there. But to your point, playing in that system for multiple years, playing within the structure of the system, I know it's a run-heavy offense, and that does help the quarterback, and he does have some good wide receivers and playmakers around him, and that certainly helps. But I don't think you could just throw in just any average quarterback and they'd be playing at that level. And the Cincinnati Bengals, I mean, that's just ridiculous. That is a ridiculous team to put on this list. I get the case that he's trying to make for having a trio of receivers that are big-time players, maybe the best group of receivers in the NFL, arguably, but give me a break. Joe Burrow is the only quarterback. I don't think there's anybody I would take ahead of Joe Burrow, I should say, other than Patrick Mahomes currently in the NFL. The guy is a superstar, and he has completely flipped that franchise around. That's just a ridiculous team to put on there. I don't know if he was just searching for a fifth team or just so he could round out the five teams there. I don't really know what he was doing there, but that's just a ridiculous call. We've got our top three offensive breakout players going into the NFL next season to watch for. Alex, why don't you kick it off with your first offensive breakout player?
I mentioned this player before. We were talking about him when we were going through the draft analysis, and I'm going to name him again, Kyle Pitts. We can also rename this breakout fantasy players as well, because these are players that I also have on my fantasy board that I'm going to be looking out for when I'm looking for steals in the late rounds as well. So let's do double duty there with that. But Kyle Pitts, it's finally time for him to have the breakout season. And when I say the breakout season, yes, he did have 1,000 yards last year. He was hurt, but he had 1,000 yards his rookie season. But now it's time to put it all together. Let's get the 80 catches. Let's get the 1,000-plus yards, and let's get 8 to 10 touchdowns as well. Let's get the full package finally going. Arthur Smith, this is on you. I understand who is that quarterback in Ritter. However, with Bijan Robinson and all those running backs that you have back there, this should be nothing but one-on-one coverage out there for Kyle Pitts all day long. And when you get in the red zone, he should be the number one target. So Kyle Pitts is my guy that I'm looking at to take in terms of a breakout as well as fantasy late round.
Yeah, we did talk about Kyle Pitts. I think he's due for a big year as well. Like you mentioned, he's played at a nice level, but he hasn't reached those expectations that we all thought he would coming out of the draft. I'm looking at a 1,200-yard season, 8 touchdowns type of year for Kyle Pitts. I think they have to force-feed him the ball in the red zone. You've got Drake London, another young, big playmaker on the outside, to take some attention away from Kyle Pitts. Now you've got a two-headed running game. I think this is the year where Kyle Pitts finally puts it all together in this Atlanta offense. I totally am with you. This is a little more under-the-radar tight end that I've got on my breakout list. Ravens tight end Isaiah Likely. He's going into year two. I could see him having a more significant impact in this new Ravens offense led by new offensive coordinator Todd Monken. You've got weapons like Odell Beckham Jr., Mark Andrews, Rashad Bateman, and Zay Flowers. Those guys are going to be drawing attention. I think Likely has the opportunity to make some big plays, especially down the seam. Now, if you watched Georgia football last year, Monken is really good at finding creative ways to get his tight ends the ball and to manufacture touches for his tight ends. This is a guy who's a big, athletic pass catcher, a guy I really liked coming out of the draft. And I think year two, he could take a big step forward.
Yeah, I mean, I like him as well. I'm hoping that maybe there's a lot of two tight end sets that we can see out there where we can Isaiah Likely, who's going to probably see single coverage in those on rather non-bracket coverages as they'll be looking at Mark Andrews. So I can agree that I did like Isaiah Likely. I will say this. I'm not sure how long he is for them. That could be a possible future trade piece should the Ravens need something, because that is a tight end. That is a starting tight end in the NFL. He's just on a team where you have somebody like Mark Andrews. My next pick, this recently happened only because of the release of Dalvin Cook, and I love this player. I love his running style. Alexander Mattison, he 1,000% reminds me of Marion Barber Jr. The holes would be a little bit easier to find. That Minnesota offensive line is a little bit better, but he's a basically C-hole, run-through hole, or even in the days of Marion Barber, C-player, run-over player. He is a violent, violent runner. Now, although he may get injured, but if we're just talking about for a season, I think with Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson and KJ Osgood out there receiving all of the attention that they're going to receive, and not to mention also TJ Hockenson, he's going to have some lanes to run through. And with his running style, I expect him to reach 1,000 yards and also have double-digit touchdowns, because when he gets into the red zone, he has a nose for the end zone. He is going to be running over people and through people to get to the end zone. So I like Alexander Mattison. Again, another fantasy jewel that you may be able to scoop up maybe around that 6th, 7th round area, depending on how you're looking. That's another play I'll be looking at as well.
Yeah, Alex, I haven't looked recently to see what his ADP is going to be in fantasy, but he's certainly a guy to circle, because I'm with you. Mattison is the reason that they felt okay cutting Dalvin Cook, plain and simple. They knew they had a guy that they felt good about moving forward, and it's because he's a really good player, and I'm with you. Breakout year all the way. My next guy on the list here, Alex, Chiefs wide receiver Sky Moore. Now, Moore had a lot thrown at him as a rookie. This is a guy who had to learn multiple wide receiver positions in a deep playbook where Andy Reid is a guy who asks a lot of his wide receivers. Now, it took him some time to really start making an impact for the Chiefs, but towards the end of the year and in that playoff run, Moore started showing why so many draft analysts, this one included, loved his tape coming out of college. He should get a much bigger share of targets this year and see a lot more opportunities with Mecole Hardman and Juju Smith-Schuster no longer in KC. He's getting a lot of buzz right now coming out of OTAs and mandatory minicamp. I think he's going to have a big-time season for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, we know how Andy Reid loves to use that slot position, and he's going to slide right into that position. You know, shout out to our guy Quick. He was talking about this player as well as Isaiah Pacheco. He keyed on these people. He talked about them nonstop. I was not aware. Obviously, none of us were really aware of Pacheco, but I definitely was not aware of Sky Moore. But then watching him matriculate throughout the season, and then Mecole Hardman got hurt, so he got a little bit more playing time. But then they made the trade for Kadarius Toney, so there was a little bit of a halt in terms of him getting snaps. Some of his snaps kind of got split with Kadarius Toney. But I think with Sky Moore, Sally in there, a full offseason, getting number one snaps in that slot position, I 1,000% agree that this guy's going to have a breakout season. Again, another late round pick that you can get. That'll be a great sub on a bye week for one of your wide receivers. I'm going to go with Mac Jones. And simply because now you have an offensive coordinator in there that comes from that Alabama system, that knows how the Alabama system works, that's going to be able to put some plays in there that Mac Jones is aware of. He still has his line to Nick Saban to talk about mac and cheese in terms of how his temperament is, to understand the temperament, to how to use that and have him channel that onto the field to be a successful player. I look for a breakout year from Mac Jones. Now, we're not talking about 5,000 yards and 40-something touchdowns. We're simply talking about competent football where we're going to get maybe around 3,800 to 4,000 yards, and at least 25 to 28 touchdowns and maybe about 8 to 10 interceptions with about 65% completion percentage. It's just going to look a lot more competent. He's going to look a lot more confident as well in going those plays. And if they are able to get DeAndre Hopkins, I'll probably revisit these numbers and go up higher on some of these numbers. But I'm going to choose Mac Jones as my third player for a breakout season.
I like it, Alex. I like that pick a lot. I did not see Mac Jones coming on this list here, but I really like what you said. And when you were running down those numbers, I was sitting here smiling because I'm sitting there thinking the exact same thing. I'm thinking 4,000 yards, 28 touchdowns, 8 to 10 picks. I mean, I was literally almost thinking the exact same numbers. Like you said, he's not going to blow you away and have some MVP level season. We know that. But I do expect a much better year from Mac Jones than we saw last year with a real play caller and a real offensive mind in the building. I think the Patriots, on a side note here, I think they could be a sneaky team that's flying under the radar for the first time in a really long time in that AFC East. Speaking of the AFC East, my last player here, not a guy that you're going to want to target in fantasy, but I had to give some love to the big guys. Jets offensive guard Elijah Vera Tucker, former first rounder out of USC. He was easily my top graded offensive guard in his draft class. He was dominant at three different positions last year: right guard, left tackle, right tackle. They moved him all over the line because of all the injuries that the Jets had on the offensive line, and he was a stud at multiple different spots. Now, he's naturally a guard, but this guy showed you just how big time of a talent he is up front. We've seen him destroy top-level edge rushers, blow up even the best defensive tackles in the run game. He missed the final 10 games of the season with his own injuries, but when he was healthy, he played at an all-pro level last year. If he stays healthy, I expect a monster season from this guy.
Yeah, when you talk about this offensive line and what we're going to need from this offensive line, if you're a Jet fan or if you're the coaching staff, you're going to need this guy to be solid, because we know what's going on with the right side of that and not knowing what you have at right tackle position and the proverbial FU that the Patriots gave the Jets when they allowed the Steelers to leapfrog them. But we know what they need. So Elijah Vera Tucker needs to be solid on that side of the line and be able to do the things that he needs to do so that they can protect the right side of Aaron Rodgers. And I do believe what we saw last year before he got injured, we were looking at a player that is going to be, I don't want to say Pro Bowl, but an all-pro player at that position. So I absolutely agree. Let's show some love to the big guys. We're done, but I just want to shout out two other players that I was looking at. One, running back Brian Robinson. We all know about, he was carjacked, I believe, and shot. And so he was out the gate slow in terms of, thankfully, it wasn't anything life-threatening, but he was slow out the gate in terms of his rookie season coming for the Washington Commanders. I do look for him to have a breakout season. And I do want to mention one more shout out to Steeler Nation, George Pickens. What we saw from George Pickens after Air Canada was traded away to Chicago, he stepped in, and the catches that he was making on the sideline, the toe tapping, the crisp route running, he gave me vibes of his former Georgia, I don't want to say teammate, but former Georgia player, AJ Green. I mean, fluid in and out, catch radius, and just anything that came within his area, he just swallowed up. So I look for a big season from those two players as well, and George Pickens and Brian Robinson.
I like it, Alex. Couple honorable mentions there. Definitely some big-time ones to circle. George Pickens, man, he really came on last year, and he's a guy that, like I mentioned with the Vikings moving off of Dalvin Cook, a big reason why they felt okay moving Chase Claypool was because of what they saw in George Pickens, and he had the catch of the year. Quite frankly, maybe the best catch since that Odell Beckham one-handed catch years ago. I mean, that was just crazy. Crazy one-handed catch that he had last season. But yeah, he's a big time player, and I think he could have a really nice season. We're going to keep the positional draft going. This has been too much fun to stop. Let's jump back to the defensive side of the ball, the big guys, the defensive tackles. Why don't you kick this off? Who are you going to draft number one going into 2023 at the defensive tackle position?
I mean, there's only one place we can go, and he's been a reigning defensive player of the year, but it's Aaron Donald. I mean, this guy's just dominant no matter where you put him on the line. He's primarily defensive tackle, but you could put him at an end in a 3-4. You can put him in the middle in a 4-3. He just simply dominates. We know what he meant in the Super Bowl, specifically on that last play of the game. He basically ended that Super Bowl because Jamar Chase was running wide open down the sideline if he didn't apply that pressure to Joe Burrow to have that off-kilter throw. But it's got to be Aaron Donald. I mean, this guy's mean. This guy's nasty. He's small. He's powerful. And that's the thing that most people don't talk about. They talk about his technique, but nobody really talks about that first punch. And if anybody ever watches NFL films, I just listen to when they have Aaron Donald mic'd up and he goes against another player and he gives the offensive guard or center that first punch. You hear the guard go, oh. And everybody knows in football, if you know anything about football, You know what that sounds is. That means you got the wind knocked out of you, and the speed that that game is moving, you're already beat, because the time it takes you for you to recover, he's already past you and your quarterback is on the ground.
Yeah, this is another one of those position groups where it's an obvious no-brainer number one pick. Aaron Donald, not only the best defensive tackle in the game, you could make a legitimate case that he's on a short list of the best defensive players to ever play in the NFL. He's that good. He is so fun to watch. A guy that can literally wreck a game by himself. Last year, had the injuries, wasn't quite the player that we had seen the couple prior years. But even with the injury-riddled season that he was dealing with, 40 quarterback pressures last season, this guy is still playing at an elite level. At number two, there's a few different directions I could go here, Alex, but I'm going to go with a guy who maybe had his best season and a guy who's really making a name for himself in the last few years on the best team in the NFL, Chris Jones of the Kansas City Chiefs. This guy was an absolute monster last year. I just mentioned the 40 quarterback pressures from Aaron Donald. Chris Jones had 97 quarterback pressures. He was a wrecking ball in the middle of the field. He is the captain of that Kansas City defense for a reason, and a guy that they have to keep on that roster if they want to keep winning titles.
Absolutely. I mean, Chris Jones, one of the things they did that was a mistake was they started him at defensive end, and he was just simply getting destroyed. If it wasn't last year, it was maybe a season ago, and they finally kicked him inside, and that defense took off when they put him back at his natural position. What he does on the inside affects everything that happens on the right and the left side of that line. And that's what you want from your defensive tackles, that those guys on the outside get those one-on-one matchups that you hopefully hope that they can beat and make plays. So like you, I struggled with this next one, and it's really same state, and that's New York. I'm going to go with Quinnen Williams. I mean, at 25 years old, what he did on that line last year, being the anchor on that defensive line and being that leader on defense, on what happened on the back end of that defense, happened a lot because of what was happening on the front end of that defense, led by Quinnen Williams. He was a wrecking ball in terms of, he was the fourth highest graded interior defender by PFF. I mean, he was just basically beating everyone to the punch all over, no matter where you put him on that line. He was winning his battles, and that was his breakout year, albeit a year that he knew he was going to be negotiating a contract year. However, he had been trending in this direction since he entered the league, and now he's here, now he's arrived, and now he's one of our top interior defenders of the league.
Yeah, he's the guy that we talked about in some recent episodes because of the contract. You mentioned it earlier when we were talking about the Jets. He wants to get a new deal. He deserves a new deal. I think they're going to find a way to get him the deal that he wants and keep him happy and on this team, because he is a building block guy for this defense. Easily one of the best defensive tackles in the game. An easy choice near the top of this list. And a guy that is only 25 years old. I mean, that is scary to think that he's got several prime years ahead of him. Now, you mentioned the New York teams, because I knew where you were headed there, because I think the two New York defensive tackles are right near each other as far as grades. So depending on who you took was going to really depend on who I took. That leaves me with Dexter Lawrence of the New York Giants. Man, this guy was really fun to watch last season. He is a guy that is such a complete defensive tackle, because not only does he push the pocket in the passing game, he's a run stuffer, just one of the best all-around players in the NFL right now, and we haven't even seen his best football yet. I feel like last year was really the season where we saw the potential early in his career. We saw him get a little better at each season, and last year was really his breakout year where we saw him put it all together, and we can see the player that the Giants thought they were drafting in the first round a couple years ago. I can't wait to see what he does in these years to come, because I think he could be a guy in a couple years like Quinnen Williams where we're debating maybe the best defensive tackle in the game.
Yeah, Dexter Lawrence at his size and what he was doing on that defensive line. And remember, let's be clear, that Kayvon Thibodeau did not start right away. So he was kind of the only guy out there. Leonard Williams was out there as well, but he was slow out the gate as well. However, this was the one guy you had to key on when you game plan for this team. This was a guy you circled and you talk to your center about every play and saying, you need to know where this guy is. You need to watch out for the stunts, the guards, the tackles, the centers. You need to know what's going on when this guy is on the field. So, yeah. And he also got paid this offseason as well, and well-deserved. It's good to see the interior guys. If they may not have the big sacks, but what they do that does not necessarily show up in the traditional stat sheet, get paid for what they've consistently been doing for the past few years. I want to show some love to those players that are getting a little bit long in the tooth in terms of the NFL, and I'm talking about Cameron Hayward. That is a guy. He's just simply been consistent, son of Ironhead Hayward, and living up to the namesake that his father had. I mean, at 33 years old, 10 and a half sacks, 74 tackles, 14 tackles for loss, along with 30 pressures as well. He is still getting it done at 34 years old. And let's remember, TJ Watt missed some time as well. So he's still been there, still putting up his numbers, still doing what he needs to do. In a 3-4 defensive lineup is that normally you do not see a lot of your interior defensive linemen getting double-digit sacks in a 3-4 lineup. But this guy consistently, I would say at least for the past 6 years, has just been a perennial Pro Bowler, perennial All-Pro first team and or second team, just simply showing up 17 games a season, hard work, playing about 72-75% of the snaps per game, and just doing his job. The lunch pail guy, I have to salute lunch pail guys that come in and simply do what they're supposed to do, the unsung heroes of the NFL.
Yeah, Cameron Hayward, such a good player. It feels like he's been doing it for so long. You're right. The captain of that Steelers defense for a reason, such a leader, and a guy that fits a trait that I know you always talk about, especially with defensive players and front seven guys, that motor. Man, his motor is 100%, 100% of the time. Really good pick there, Alex. I'm going to go with Titans defensive tackle Jeffrey Simmons. This is a guy that maybe deserves to be higher on this list, but it's hard to find a spot for him because we've just mentioned so many good players already. This is a guy who's really just a rare combination of speed and power. Last year, he had a season that dipped a little bit from where he was the year before. But with that being said, he still was top 10 in pressures, and he had 7.5 sacks, which was also top 10 at his position. One of the best run defenders in the entire league, period. This guy is a complete player, a guy that can collapse the pocket, shut down the run, a beast up front, Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah, Jeffrey Simmons, I mean, another player that recently got his contract extended as well. Building block player on that Tennessee defense. I mean, he was the reason that that team was surging the way it was surging about a year and a half ago when they were on their way to the playoffs and doing a lot of things that you will want your leader to do on defense, completely causing havoc. We saw what that Titans team did to Joe Burrow. I mean, just simply beating him up. Unfortunately, they lost, but that defense 1,000% did their job, led by Jeffrey Simmons. And you're absolutely right. He probably could have a fight if we were just to simply have the Jeffrey Simmons conversation. We can probably fight to put him or around Dexter Lawrence and Quinnen Williams right behind Chris Jones. So that's an absolute there. I was looking at a few players, but I'm going to go and I'm going to stick with Jonathan Allen of the Washington Commanders. Now, he does play on a very, very, very talented line with Montez Sweat and Jared Allen as well. So this is definitely a talented line. However, even when you're on a talented line, you still have to do your job. And even with Chase Young not being there, he still did his job. 7.5 sacks, 21 pressures, combination tackles, 65 tackles. I mean, he was all over the place. You know, again, Chase Young was missing, but he stepped up. He did his job. Again, 16 games, playing about, if I'm looking at this correctly, played about 78% of the defensive snaps. That is a lot for when you have these big guys and leaning on these 300-pound big guys and leaning on them and consistently being able to do your job. I think Jonathan Allen is trending, and he's trending up in the right direction.
Yeah, and you can make a case that Allen is one of the best pass rushing bigs on this list. The guy consistently gets pressure on the quarterback. I love that pick, Alex. All right, to round out the list, I'm going to go with Indianapolis Colts DeForest Buckner. This is a guy, as you know, that really made a name for himself on that 49ers defensive line. I think he's a guy that almost got a little overlooked at times because he had so much talent around him with Nick Bosa and Eric Armstead. He was almost a forgotten guy in a lot of ways. Maybe didn't get the credit he deserved. Since he's been with the Colts, I think he's really started to make more of a national name for himself. His pass rushing grades, if you look at it from a PFF standpoint, he's been a stud pretty much every year since he's been in the league. 56 quarterback pressures last season. Another guy that can collapse the pocket. He can play the run. Very complete player. And after doing this exercise, Alex, and doing these position groups, it's become really clear. Some of these groups are harder to do than others. This group was really tough to come up with eight guys, because I feel like there's another five or six guys that probably really deserve to be in this discussion.
Yeah, you know, I was taking a look at the list and seeing like who would I have missed. I mean, we quickly mentioned Christian Wilkins, DJ Reader, Derek Brown, some of those guys that are surging towards probably being on this list and have an opportunity next year when we do this list again.
Man, no doubt about it, Alex. But that is going to do it for today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it, PGF Nation. Before we go, be sure to subscribe to the free newsletter at pintglassfootball.com if you haven't already, to get exclusive content directly to your inbox. I want to give a shout out to our friends at The Tailgate Foodie for sponsoring today's episode. Check them out at thetailgatefoodie.com. I'm Brad Fowler. He's Alex Higdon. This is Pint Glass Football, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast.